Mindful Work is the official podcast brought to you by the Mindful Life Mindful Work team. Amidst these rapidly changing times, our conversations will explore the intersection of self-awareness and team performance and help you to optimize your efforts through mindful work. On this episode of the Mindful Work podcast, Calvin Niles explores with guests how mindful work connects to creativity, followed by insights from the Mindful Life Mindful Work team.
Welcome back to a new episode of the Mindful Work Podcast. I'm your host, Calvin Niles, and I am one of the team members here at Mindful Life, Mindful Work. We hope to support you to develop effective leadership, greater team alignment, real employee commitment, and a company culture that is deeply connected to your mission. This episode is going to be full of creativity, but specifically creative problem solving and how it relates, of course, to working mindfully, but interestingly, how it connects to trust. But as we are learning now to embed more mindful practices in the way that we work, we are going to start with our usual practice. Let us now take a mindful pause.
Pausing is so very important. Take a moment wherever you are, whatever activity or whatever you're doing, whether you're at work or at home. Just take a moment. And again, it doesn't take much more than about a minute to pause, to reset. And today, what I'd like to suggest is noticing change, noticing the subtleties of change. Even when we pause, change is happening. We're aging slowly. Time is elapsing. Small things are changing in our body. Maybe we notice micro adjustments, waves of sensation. As we sit here in the pause, or if we're walking, we can do this as well. If we notice the pause, notice the subtle changes. And noticing changes is so very important because things are always changing. There's things we can be aware of and things that we can't be aware of. But if we notice change, we know these things. We know that there's stuff that we're unaware of that we can trust is changing. So sometimes when things feel stuck or things feel impossible, when we've practiced noticing change, we know that they can't be completely stuck, that they're changing subtly beneath our field of awareness. So as you sit here pausing or walking or standing or lying down, notice the breath, notice the body, be sensitive to change, be awake and alert to discovering change that might not be readily available in first look. And then carry this throughout our day. Be aware, be on the lookout for change. Maybe it's in a conversation with one of our colleagues. The inflection in what they said has a subtle difference. Maybe they've changed their perspective on some topic. And be curious about these subtle changes. Have a wonderful day of practice.
You know, maybe to begin and to kind of ground our listeners a little bit, you know, I'm immediately reminded of Project Aristotle, which is a very well-known, of course, study that was done by Google some years ago. And they spoke about what are the elements of the highest performing teams, right? And intuitively, you would probably say, if you were going to, you know, list those out, you'd say something like, oh, well, you've hired all the right members and, you know, you've got so-and-so who's the, you know, productivity whiz over there. And, you know, you would look at the individualized. Yeah. Oh, yeah. That person wasn't. Yeah. exactly. Right. And so you would probably look at those elements in, you know, that's where most of us would go, I think. And what was so fascinating about that study, and I think that's bared out now in a lot more supporting literature and research, is that actually what it makes a team the most productive is trust, right? And, or some may call this psychological safety. And that's a kind of a buzzword that gets a lot of traction at the moment. But really, it's saying, to what extent do you think that your team members have your back, that you have theirs? You can disagree, productively. And you know, I think for me, I really enjoy the framework by Timothy Clark, The Four Stages of Psychological Safety. And he speaks about deepening psychological safety. So the first stage might be, to what extent do the members of your team feel that they belong, right? So at a human level, to what extent do they feel that they belong, that they, you know, that they're allowed to be there? And then we kind of go through the deepening stages of things like, at what level do they feel they can learn? At what level do they feel they can engage? And then finally, we look at what level does the team, do your team members feel that they can challenge the status quo? And that's really that deep level of trust in a team that you feel that you're able to say, you know what? I think plan B is not great. I think we should go with plan A.
Well, that was a really interesting introduction from Sarah. And what really caught my attention there was that she mentions deep levels of trust in a team. Of course, that is helpful for strong relationships, as we've heard in previous episodes. It's also good for decision making that we've touched on before and in high performing teams. But what's really interesting is that trust clearly has a link to creativity. I was reading a recent review online, frontiersinpsychology.org, and it was called The Influence of Trust on Creativity, a review by a number of academics in China, including Yan Chen, and a number of others who I will link in these show notes. But they say in their intro that trust and creativity are the two fundamental elements that drive the reproduction and development of human society. The two features are important driving forces behind the sustainable development of enterprises, societies, and nations, and they are valuable assets of the human spiritual world. They later go on to say that a high level of team trust allows members to be better able to focus, communicate, and support each other, and increases team creativity.
You see, Calvin, that ability of there is no wrong answer can only come when I have this in-depth trust on you. Because tomorrow, imagine when we are working together and you go and say, mindful life, mindful work is about A, B, C. Now, I haven't spoken to you. You had this brainwave over the night, you know, or in another podcast, and you've, you know, taken that notion and taken that learning and gone ahead and said, this is what mindful life, mindful work is. Now, at that moment, do I have the trust and am I able to sense you to say, yes, you know, that makes sense. And this is where I am now starting to codify it, where I'm saying this is not accidental. This is learned. This is a behavior that, yes, I, as a creative team, will imbibe to say, I will be sensing, I will be trusting, I will go and approach with a yes and. And here I'm bringing a very theater term here, which is saying there's no right, wrong answer. I will support you no matter what you say, because I sense you and I trust you. So, yeah, these are just some bedrocks that I believe allow for creative. It is today highly coded. It is not an accidental process. It is, as I also said about mindful work, it is intentional. Creativity is also intentional, you know, and there are many theories like Julia Cameron is one of my favorite authors on this. She's widely quoted. She's written the book Artist's Way, widely quoted in the creative circles. And it is about showing up consistently. It is intentional. And I would say the same thing about creative organizations. Companies decide, hey, we want to be sensing, we want to be agile, we want to be moving and responding to people's needs. Can we bring these principles in place? So it's reaching the place of being coded.
How do we get there? How do we get there to that space of having a team that is mindful and is able to build that trust? Well, mindfulness is the tool that we can use to get to that space of trust and high performance. And so the way in which we do that is we start by inviting teams to build awareness of themselves as individuals and then of the team dynamic. So when we, for example, this is a very concrete example, is there not always in every team somebody who talks a lot, right? Or the person whose ideas tend to dominate in the team environment, right? And so this is a kind of a classic example where someone like that, it may be part of their journey will be learning to become aware of that tendency to jump in, right? That tendency to kind of maybe let others not have as much airtime, right? So maybe part of their journey in that team environment is learning to kind of take that step. And then on the other hand, you may have someone for whom has fantastic ideas and, you know, insight and input, but may not always have that spaciousness in the team in order to share, right? So part of, I think, developing a mindful team is as a group coming to become more aware of our own behaviors, preferences, biases, etc., and then developing a cohesiveness as a group so that you can work really well together.
Sarah is teaching us about cohesion, shining the light on some of our own behaviors, biases, and preferences, and just really about improving our team dynamic. I was reflecting on Varun's point too, where he got me thinking about creativity and innovation. He mentioned that it doesn't just come from responding to a pain in the organization or some major problem to be solved. It actually comes from a place of joy. Which is funny because when I think of a great team dynamic, playfulness is something that automatically comes to my mind. I always think of playing with my colleagues and having a lot of fun, which is quite an interesting correlation that I really hadn't thought about in any deeper, meaningful way until I explored this more deeply with Varun. So what are the conditions for creativity to emerge that are good for society and the bottom line?
You are aware of Maslow's emotional needs. Yeah. Now, the typical image that comes to mind when I say that, what comes to mind? Yeah. You'll be surprised, Calvin. Maslow's never called it as a hierarchy or never called it as the pyramid. This was interpretation of the later scholars who interpreted it as that pyramid, which has become almost synonym to Maslow's. His bit was that as somebody evolves, newer needs emerge. So, you know, as someone is growing up, you first only have the basic needs. And then as you mature in life, newer needs emerge. So you start feeling the esteem needs. You start feeling the actualization needs. You start feeling the respect needs. And there is a time in one's life where you have all of these needs present in equal measure. For me, this is a recent learning for me as well. It changed my perspective so much because always I used to feel creativity happens when my stomach is full. You know, in the metaphor, like, oh, sales are happening. We are in a good place. Now we can play and we can sort of create something. But that's not true, which is the impression that the, you know, the pyramid gives. It almost like, you know, once one need is over, then you have the other need. But the new way of looking at it is you reach a place where all these needs are equally present. And for me, it resonated so much because, you know, if you have a homeless person and you just give them food, like, here, take, there is a good chance that the person will refuse what you've given. You know, the dignity is present at the same level as hunger is. That's why people are not willing to sort of sell their soul for just food. And many, you will see many of them taking ethical choices even. And you have these YouTube videos going around, you know, somebody going and asking somebody who's a homeless person, can you give me a dollar? And these are all these social experiments we keep seeing. Where is all of that coming from? It is sort of, at least for me, proving to me that, yeah, it is not the pyramid. It is you reach a place where many of these needs are present at once. Now, the reason I share this is absolutely applicable in case of an organization. In fact, in my thesis, I recently completed my studies. So I was writing a thesis around this. And I said, organizations also have these emotional needs. And you have all of these needs present at the same intensity. Now, you got to be able to balance these. Can you balance to say, okay, how will we reach self-sustainability while being able to create something, while maybe creating an impact, while being a healthy organization for our people? And all of these go hand in hand.
So creativity isn't something that just happens after your basic needs are met. It can happen at any time. I loved exploring this subject of creativity with Varun. And it also has a number of ways, this word creativity, of being expressed.
So let's very soon understand creativity. There are many theories about it, right? Some say it stems from within, while some say you channel it. So there's a higher power at play that sort of, you, and you are just the instrument through which creativity channels. But what most people would agree about is creativity is a sense of adventure. You're okay to play in not knowing for certain, and you're okay to play and create on the go. And this is where my training as an improv theater actor works, because many times when we were on stage, you know, you are sort of going with the flow of how that scene is going. And you're also able to take risks at now at different moments, not knowing how it will turn out. So that's the second bit about creativity, is it is a lot of experiments, and you got to have the courage to see how those experiments will go, for the better or for the worse. There is also this whole bit about, I can't fake it. And this is a sort of against how most business goes, where you say, oh, you can fake it. You know, in case of theater, the audience knows instantly. Whenever I'm a character, which is not me, and I'll be reduced to being caricature, the same thing goes with an organization. If I'm not inherently a company which is, say, impact making or humanistic, the moment I go completely out of my DNA, people catch it. And if it's, especially if it's not backed with systemic change, if it's not backed with what I am saying, that's why, you know, leaders can claim, oh, we are so and so, but people catch it instantly. Oh, this guy's lying. He's full of bullshit. So, you know, same goes with enterprise. You try and create those ads. Oh, we are celebration. People say, no, you are soda water. You know, they sense bullshit very quickly. So it's not just about rebranding. It got to come from within.
We're coming to the end of another episode already. Time flies when we're exploring such rich subject matter, which I thoroughly enjoy. And as you know, I'm putting this together after having done the interviews and continue to compound my own learning as well, which I hope helps to deliver even a better listening experience for you. If that is the case, then please do leave us a review. We would be delighted to reach more ears and minds with this show. And do send a question if you would like me to put any of these questions that you have to my guests for a future episode. In the meantime, after we've learned a little bit about the relationship between trust and creativity, and that creativity can come at any time, the organizations that are most creative have the most trusting and high-performing teams, and we've heard some references to this through psychological safety. We've heard of creative exercises from Julia Cameron. And we've even heard about the culture map from Sarah. I'll just leave you with a final thought from Sarah Hunt, and I look forward to seeing you in the next episode. Bye for now.
You know, I think if I were to leave with a parting thought, you know, I want to leave with maybe a thought about where we're headed, you know, because I think, for a long time, I think mindfulness has been something that's a sort of a nice to have in a lot of businesses. And folks see that as a sort of a, you know, it's a side thing, like, oh, it's sort of a nice to do sort of thing. But I think increasingly what we're seeing now, you know, and we see regulations starting to come in parts of Europe around building in mental health in the workplace as a requirement of occupational health and safety. What we're really starting to see is not only is there greater an increase to have awareness and have a mindful flourishing workplace as a baseline expectation of what work should be. But also too, we're seeing increasingly businesses around the world wanting their employees not to just to survive or to endure their experience, but actually to come out the end of their employment journey with a greater understanding of themselves and a deeper sense of meaning and purpose. And I think mindfulness is such a critical part of that journey. And I think there are so many indicators and movements that we're seeing that businesses are increasingly responding to that, and employees are increasingly putting pressure and saying, this is what I want from my workplace experience. And so that is a very hopeful message, I think, in terms of where we're headed for the future. And I think for the future of mindful work overall.
Mindful Work is the official podcast brought to you by Mindful Life Mindful Work Incorporated. To learn more about our work, visit www.mindfullifemindfulwork.com.